Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, Roy Matlock, we are getting started once again talking about money, and if you need help with your money, this is the place to listen in. We do it every week. We're out here educating. That's the goal. You know, once you get educated, then you can make good decisions. And if you're just tuning in right now, you can go to RoyMatlockJr.com. And, you know, if you want to catch up a little bit, go to our podcast. And you can get that also anywhere you do podcasts. Just search the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hour. If you're tuning in right now, and we have been going down a track, and this track really has been going on for a long time. And it has to do with building your offense and your defense. And, you know, we've already passed through the defense a while back, and so now we're in the offense stage, and kind of a recap of the offense. When we first get started, our goal is to get ourselves in a position to where we can start really saving and accumulating money. People ask me all the time, how do you start moving forward? Well, the first thing is you get your defense in place, and your defense is you have an emergency fund, you get out of debt, you buy the right insurance so you don't get wiped out on that. And then once you do that, you create a gap, all right, and that gap allows you to save money. And then you apply things, you know, you plan, you think, you dream, and you take action. How about that? And before you know it, one day you're rolling along, you say, man, I can't believe, you know, that things are going in the right direction like they are. But the reason you did it is because you had a plan. You started doing something. And so the defense puts you in a position to not lose. And we start there. So we have a budget. We have an emergency fund. We protect our income and liabilities. And then we pay off all the bad debt. Bad debt's anything has to do with, you know, debt that you can't afford, number one. Number two, if it's tied to something that is depreciating in value, you don't want to be putting a bunch of money into those kind of things. So then we were able to purchase a home, kind of get our foundation there. And then once we do that, then we start rolling into the offense. And the offense is investments, retirement planning, if you're going to save money for your kids' college, and other investments. I call it opportunity money. That's the money you have to take advantage of opportunities. You never know when those opportunities are going to come along. And then we build it around what we call the FIN number. The FIN number is your financial independence number. Your financial independence number is the amount of money you're going to need in order to quit and never worry about money again. Let money become fun, okay, and doing that. So then we move into, now that we're going to start doing that, let's understand investments. And, you know, when you're out there investing money, there's really there's probably four things that I kind of bring to mind that really maybe more like three things that I bring to mind that are investments that typically people go into. You know, you can go into individual investments. We're going to call it the stock market for the sake of it. And we can do that. We can invest in real estate. That's another one. Those are really your two areas. And then once we get inside of that, or we can go to an insurance company, which would be the third area, and that's where you buy annuities. And annuities are long-term retirement planning type things. So if you kind of think about, you've got the market, the stock market, which could be considered the stock and bond market. We're going to call it the market. The second is real estate. That could be your rental properties, things like that. And the third could be annuities, and there's different types of them. So what I'm going to do today is kind of walk you through the understanding of how all of these things work. So when someone, if you're at dinner and someone asks you a question, hey, where do you have your 401k invested? Or, what's your allocation? You're going to say, well, here's how I do it. And this is why I do it, because I understand it. And so let's start out. If we're going to be looking at our 401k, the 401k is going to be, or your 403b if you work for a nonprofit or a school system, hospital, something like that. But the long story, or your IRA, any of those are generally speaking going to be put into mutual funds or what's called managed accounts. So we're going to talk about a mutual fund. What is a mutual fund? It's a financial vehicle where we pool our money together. And when we pool our money together, you can, a lot of mutual funds, I remember my first one I opened was $50 a month. So you can get started for very little money. And then what happens is that money gets pooled. And between you and everybody else, I know I've got one fund that I put people in that has 257 thousand millions in it. How about that? That's a lot of money, $257,000 million. And so when you have $257,000 million, you can afford to hire people to manage that money. And so what these investment firms do, and you've heard of them, Fidelity Investments and American Funds and Vanguard, all these different types of ones. And by the way, those three are all different. I'm going to talk about that. But when you start putting your money into things like this, you are buying professional money managers. So these are the geeks. These are the Harvard MBAs. These are the guys that are on Wall Street. And what they do is they do research, and they put your money in stocks, bonds, or in some times cash. All right, in order to make a return on your money. They generally charge about 1%, maybe a little less than that. And a mutual fund is something that you can go into. Your 401ks are pretty much invested in mutual funds. And so we have stocks, which are ownership. So that means they own companies. So if you go to the bank, as an example, and you save money at the bank will borrow money from you at a very low interest rate. And then what they'll do is they'll loan it back at 18% on a credit card, or, you know, on a home at 3%, whatever it is, and then they make a profit. Well, they pay you as a saver maybe 0.2%, less than 1%, and then they turn around and loan it out at 18%. So what is a stock? Well, rather than being a loaner, what we would do is tell you to be an owner. And the way to be an owner is you don't stock, okay? And if you own stock in that bank, then you're sharing the profits that they're obviously going to make way above, okay, what you're going to get at 0.2%. And so we have bond funds and we have money market funds. So we have stocks, bonds, and money markets. We're going to get into the details on how that works. But what we then do is we turn this over, and then these fund managers turn around and they research. If they do what's called a managed account, a managed mutual fund, or there's something called an index fund. You've heard of that. Vanguard is known for index funds, where they just put it across the market because the market's done well over a long period of time. And so then you can buy stock funds, bond funds, and money market funds. So now we're starting to get an understanding of the different ones based on your risk tolerance. You are able to make a good decision one way or the other on that. So if you want more information on just in general education, I would encourage you. Visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Download one of our guides called How Money Works. It's going to talk a lot about what I'm talking about today. You can also sign up for the podcast. We also have a series of Zoom meetings that you can sign up for. And matter of fact, we have a 12-part course, 45 minutes each, to help you get educated. Once again, we appreciate you listening in, and we'll be right back after a short break. All right, we are back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and tuning in today. If you are interested in learning about investments, that's what we're talking about. We're going to be talking about all the different types of things that you can do. If you came in off the break, we were talking about the difference in the different types of mutual funds. And again, I would encourage you, visit RoyMatlockJr.com and download the guide called How Money Works. It will help you to really even further understand what we're doing. So visit RoyMatlockJr.com and do that. It's a free download. You'll love it. It's about 40 pages, and it really teaches you a lot about how investments work. And so why do we need to know about investments? Well, we need to know about it because, you know, at the end of the day, if you've heard the saying, if what you don't know won't hurt you, well, in this case, it will hurt you, because if you're not getting your money properly invested, then what you're doing is you're having your money not work for you. And later down the line, it will show up in the form of you won't have as much money because you didn't get it going. And so I always tell people that if you want to get ahead when it comes to savings, the first thing is you get educated. The second thing is once you get educated, you make a decision that you're going to do something, and then you automate that decision. And what I mean by automating is maybe it's your 401k at work where you say, pull so much out, all right? Or maybe it's a IRA that you do, or a retirement account of some type, and you have it automatically pulled out of your account. And so that way that allows you to automate your FIN number, and your FIN number is that amount of money you need in order to quit one day. So we automate it. We say, what's my FIN? My FIN is I want $100,000 a year, all right, in today's dollars. I'm going to retire in 30 years. And we put inflation in, and we say, well, that's $2.5 million. Well, How much do I need to save if I get 8% or 9%? And it comes up and we say, hey, it's $1,400. So you say, well, if I save $1,400 a month, I'm good, or whatever it may be. So what we do then is we have to choose a place to put it. We have mutual funds as an example. You can buy a stock fund, and in those stock funds, you're going to have different types of stock funds. You're going to have a large company stock. You're going to have a mid-size, you're going to have a small cap, you're going to have internationals, you're going to have what's called growth and income funds, where they invest in large companies that pay dividends. All right, that's what the income is dividends. And if you break it down, we have growth and income funds. We have, which are large, they invest large company stocks, and they pay dividends. They may own companies like Procter & Gamble or Exxon, stuff like that, where they're paying dividends. Then we have what's called a growth fund. A growth fund would own Google and Starbucks, where they're out expanding and doing stuff like that. Growth, meaning you buy it with the idea the stocks inside of there will go up. We have, from there, inside of growth funds, we have, mid-size funds, large cap growth, and even we move into the small caps, and the small caps will be more your aggressive growth. And then also we have international funds and global funds. International invest outside the U.S. Only, and a global fund will invest all across the U.S. and the world. And so then what we do is we start allocating. We say, well, within stocks, we have this, then we have bonds. Now, if we go into bond funds are designed as the conservative portion of your portfolio. If you're young and you've got a long time, you're probably not going to be putting a lot in bonds. Everybody's different, but for the most part, you're not going to do that. But a bond fund has different types of bonds, from government bonds. They have tax-free bonds called municipal bonds. We have what is called a corporate bond. That's where a big company, big stable company, borrows money from the public and pays an interest rate. Stable, strong company. And then we have what we call high yields. High yields are junk bonds. You've heard of that. Why do they call it? Well, they're because they put money in companies' bonds that maybe are not quite as financially strong, but they get a bigger yield. So now what we've done is we're starting to understand all that. We have a money market account that's like a similar to a bank account, and the banks have money markets, but the bottom line is that it's for your very conservative liquid cash. And then right in the middle, we have what we call a balance fund. A balance fund is going to have stocks and bonds in it. So you got some conservative, some growth. All right. So when we're out there investing money, what we have to do, we have to understand that. So now if you start looking at that, you say, wow, here's my 401k options. And you're going to see it's going to say it's going to have, your fixed accounts. Those are going to be probably, and then you got your equity, fixed equity, maybe a money market, whatever it may be. And then you're going to go in there and allocate it. And what I tell people, for the most part, if you have an option to pick a target date series where they just say, hey, look, pick your year in which you think you're going to retire. That's an easy solution. They stick that in there in order for the fund family. What they'll do is they'll just manage it based on your age and how long you have going out there, or you can go in and allocate it. Now, some of the benefits when you go into a mutual fund that a lot of people, you may or may not know, but the first one is it's very liquid. And so you can, get your money instantly. I mean, if you need it out now, you don't want to do it because it's a long-term investment, but if you need the money, you can get the money. It's not tied up or anything like that. It's not like an annuity or something like that. Now, if you have a retirement plan tied to it, you have to deal with whatever the tax consequences or the penalties if you're, below 59 and a half might happen. But the long and short of it is that mutual funds are liquid. Mutual funds provide diversification. And what that means is it's not unusual for a fund, an individual fund, to own 200 to 400 companies in there. So you've heard never put all your eggs in one basket. So that allows you to do that. And if you go in and buy a portfolio of mutual funds, then guess what you have? You may have 200 to 400 stocks and have 3 or 4 different types of funds. So you're just very diversified. It's across industries, across, the globe, whatever it may be. So you get a lot of diversification. You have minimal investment requirements. Like I said, I started my first one with $50 a month. You can still do that. So I always tell anybody that's young, just start saving $50 a month. Do something. Have it automatically drafted. And then you get the benefit of the professional money manager who's out there managing that. And you can get all different types of funds that are out there. So now, what are some of the different types of funds? So I'm going to give you as a general rule, you have index funds. And a lot of people have heard the word index funds. And why do you go into an index fund? The biggest index fund manager is going to be Vanguard. And an index fund, the idea is that we don't know what's going to happen, but let's just throw it across the S&P 500. And that index owns 500 stocks, the top 500 based on market cap. And so then what they do is they say, well, we're every day going to reallocate our portfolio to be representative of the size of the company. So if we have a company that, say, Facebook is 3% of the S&P 500, then you're going to own 3%. And so automatically you don't do anything. You just throw it in there. You forget about it. They don't manage it. They just manage the allocation. And the benefit of an index fund is that over a long period of time, index funds have averaged about 10% historically over a lifetime. That means your money doubles about every 7 years. The cost on them are very inexpensive. All right. So if you just throw it in there and forget about it, they're not managing it. So you're not paying a lot to have that in the management fee. So there's some of the benefits. The negatives with it is that they're not managed and they're always invested. And so therefore, sometimes you have to be concerned about volatility. And also index funds tend to get weighted on the stocks that have gone up the most. So you got a little bit more volatility involved in that. So that's an index fund. When we come back from our break, we're going to go in and talk about the other types, which you have value funds and we have growth funds. And so and those are different management styles. American Funds is an example. You know, these are the three top I'm mentioning. I'm not making recommendations, but I'm saying American Funds tends to be value. Value tends to buy companies that are more undervalued. All right, with the idea that they make their money at the purchase. A growth stock manager is going to buy something that's more growth oriented. They think it doesn't matter what we're paying now, it's going to keep going up. Fidelity Investments tends to be more of a, you know, growth stock manager. So in doing all this, I'm not making recommendations on any of them. I'm just kind of giving you an idea. When you're looking at it, you say, you know, I've heard of those names. Okay, what does that mean? All right. And so when we come back from the break, I'm going to get into what is a value fund, What is that? And then I'm going to get into what a growth fund is. We already talked about what an index fund is. And then at that point, you'll get a better idea on it. So, hey, real quick, if you need help on your money, we are here to help you. If you go to roymatlockjr.com, you can schedule a quick phone call to do a 15-minute to 30-minute phone review. We do Zoom. We do all that kind of stuff. And we still meet with you. If you feel comfortable doing that, you can come into the office. But visit roymatlockjr.com. Again, today's show is geared toward how money works. Download if you want to do that. Also, if you would like to get way more details, you know, and really catch up, go to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money Business Hour podcast. We will be right back after a short break. All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we are continuing down our path on getting the offense set up, understanding investments. If you're just tuning in, we've got all kinds of good stuff that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk in more detail about mutual funds, about managed accounts, about annuities. We're going to get into all this and a little bit about real estate. I mean, all kinds of things. So if you need more information, you should go to roymatlockjr.com and go to the podcast and get on track on that. We put those out every week. You'll have something new coming to you. So anyway, we talked about at the break, we talked about what is an index fund. Now I'm going to talk to you about a value fund manager. A value fund manager tends to buy companies that are out of favor. They tend to buy companies. If you were a real estate investor and you were buying foreclosures, you would be more in line with what a fund manager would be looking for in a value manager type. They look for value stocks. They feel like that they're making their money at the purchase. And what that means is that they go out and they analyze. You know, Warren Buffett is one of these guys that he always said, I never wanted to go to New York or Wall Street because I didn't want to get the noise in my head. So what I want to do, I'm going to stay out in Omaha and I'm going to value a company. I'm going to look at, I don't want to know the price that the stock market says it is. I want to figure out what it is myself. And so he would go in and value all these companies and he'd say, I think this company is worth $40 a share. And he would go out there and then he'd look and he's like thinking, You know, it's trading for 70 right now. Why would I pay $70 for a $40 company? All right. And so then he would keep analyzing. Then he'd find another one, and he finds that right now the stock market is trading it at 20, but I think it's worth 40. So he starts buying it because he bought it out of favor. In other words, people felt like, man, we don't like this company, da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to give you a perfect example. I was at a meeting years and years and years ago in Apple stock. Steve Jobs was coming back. He had left, and Apple was on the brink of disaster. And one of the fund groups was telling me that the guy said, we did our analysis on it, and Apple was trading for $7 a share. And we calculated it was a good buy because the real estate holdings, we could liquidate all their real estate and get $12 a share. So we knew we had nothing to worry about. We had $12 in collateral and only paying $7 for it. And so you think about that. They went out and they started doing that. That would be a value fund manager. Why do you buy value funds? Value funds tend to be more conservatively managed. That's, you know, so people as they get older and things like that, you want to make sure that you have some value type things in your portfolio because it allows you to have a little bit more downside protection. Because if you're buying it at a discount on the front end, there you go. Now, what's a growth style manager? A growth style manager is going to be buying the, if you're comparing it to real estate again, we're buying the corner lot downtown, perfect location, and you never get a deal on buying it. And if you're buying real estate like that, you say, I don't care. It's the corner lot downtown. It's the best location, period. So you know what's going to happen? It's going to go up anyway. Now, the value manager is buying 15 miles out of town and saying, hey, we're going to get it at a discount. Nobody knows about this yet, but it's going to, when the city moves out, we're going to make money on it. And so when we go in there, so you have value, you have growth, and then you have index. So those are your different mutual funds that you can go into. Now, we also can go into what's going on. What are some of the bottom line on the mutual funds? All right, so you can buy what is called a broker fund where you pay a brokerage fee, and you do that, and you pay a fee, and if you leave it in there, it's going to be one of the least expensive ways to purchase investments. Because you pay the brokerage fee once. If you leave it in there for 1 year, you pay the brokerage fee over a year. But if you leave it in there for 20 years, you divided that brokerage fee in essence out over a 20-year period. So it becomes a very low-cost way to do it. So don't be confused. I hear these ads that, hey, we're a fiduciary. I'm a fiduciary as well. All right. But don't think that fiduciary means less cost. All right. We're going to get into what a managed portfolio is. And that's where it's very similar to a mutual fund. You go into what's called a managed account. And what a managed account is, whereas mutual funds, you might go into a specific fund family, meaning you go into a Fidelity or American Funds or any of these different ones, all right, and you turn around and you purchase those funds in that family, and they have a broad section of stuff, but you pay a brokerage fee. Now, if you leave that one fund group and you go to another fund group, and you purchase again, you pay another brokerage fee. Now, if you choose to do it on your own, you can do that. And if you do that, you're going to be picking all your stocks and bonds and stuff like that accounts. But the long and short of it is a brokerage fee. Every time you make a move outside of that fund family, you pay a fee. So it becomes expensive if you move from one fund to the next. So then you say, well, what can I do if I like that? Well, you can go into what's called a managed portfolio. A managed account is an investment account that the investor, okay, turns over the money to a manager, and that manager, okay, will manage it, and you can have access to anything you want to put it into. And then a broker will sit with you and will negotiate a fee with you to oversee the account. 1% is typical, you know, that goes on. And so what happens is if you want to have some funds and you want to have some real estate investment trust and you want to have one fund from this family, one from that family, and so on, it doesn't matter. It's always the same cost, okay? But there are some differences in the managed accounts, especially if you go into an account where it's a taxable account. So you can actually tell managed portfolio, so don't sell this right now, because I don't want the taxes this year. So you can be timed to minimize tax liability, okay, whereas mutual funds have no control over that. So if you own a mutual fund, the fund manager doesn't ask you But if you have a managed account, you can do that. So you have a little bit more transparency and control over the assets. Okay. The negatives are higher minimums to get into it. Generally speaking, you know, if you're less than maybe 250,000, you probably aren't going to get into a managed account. You can, but the fees become pretty high when you go down low, like any lower than that. And so the negatives are higher minimum investments, okay, and higher fees. The positives are you have access to everything, all right? So a lot of people, they go that way. They call those fiduciary accounts. Now, why do they call them that? Well, they're fiduciary accounts because the fee's the same regardless of the investment. Doesn't matter where you go, where it ends up. If this fund manager's not doing well, you go somewhere else. Doesn't matter. It always works out the same when it comes to that. So that's a managed account. So now the other option you have is you go in and you buy it on your own. You buy individual stocks, which my experience has been most people, I don't say most people, most people, maybe majority of people don't have the time nor the inclination, training, okay, to be able to outperform these guys that are full-time professional money managers. So what I always do is I stick to the funds or the managed accounts, those kind of things. I'm not going to be putting my money in and trying to be smarter than the experts who are out there picking individual stocks and putting it into the funds. And even the experts make mistakes. That's why they only have maybe 3 to 5% of the money in any one company. Then we have what we call rental properties. What about that? Everybody says, I want to have a rental property. All right. And so I can buy real estate, or you can buy what's called a REIT. And a REIT is a real estate investment trust that owns, operates, or finances income-generating real estate. It's similar to a mutual fund. REITs pool the money and the capital of individual investors, numerous investors, and so the investors then get dividends without having to buy, manage, finance, do all the stuff that goes along with it. So the question is, should you buy a rental property or should you buy a real estate investment trust, right? And when we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to talk more about that, and by the end of the show, I'm hoping to get into more details on how annuities work. So if you're just tuning in right now, you can get all the resources of the show by going to roymatlockjr.com. You can download our guide called How Money Works. You can also, our Family Financial Workshop, which is a 3-hour course we did at the beginning of the year that you can just hit a button and we'll send it to you, and you get your kids in there. Gives you some great ideas for your teenagers to learn about money. And also, of course, we have the One Knowledge Junior podcast. So with that, stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Roy Knowledge Junior. And do you have anyone helping you with your money? If you have an investment advisor, you know, financial advisor like me, say, or someone that was trained by me, do you think you might do a little bit better? If you'd like a free consultation, quick phone call to kind of get an overview of where you're at, to find out if there's a fit between you and I or my company, visit roymatlockjr.com, or you can call 615-843-2999, and you can jump in there. If you're just coming into the show, we're on our last segment here, and we've been talking about mutual funds, managed accounts. Now we're talking about REITs and real estate. So what is a real estate? You know, I have people all the time, they say, well, you know, I'm just buying real estate. And I said, well, that's fine. Just realize that if you buy real estate, you are not buying an investment. You're starting a business. All right. And when I tell people that, they're like, hang on a second, what do you mean? I said, well, if you own a rental property, the first thing you do is you take and you invest money. So whether you pay cash for it, which I wouldn't on a rental property, but either that or you're purchasing and financing and so on. First thing you do, if you're smart, what you should do is put that in some type of LLC. So that way, if somebody decides to fall on their head at your property or their dog bites them or bites somebody, they don't turn around and try to sue you directly. So a lot of real estate owners will have the real estate owned by an LLC. It's a limited liability corporation. That's where you need to get legal advice from a, you know, a lawyer, but it's just something that a lot of times. But anyway, the reason you do that is because it's a business. And so let's start out with the business. If you buy individual property, you have to have a marketing side of it, which is you may just have to run an ad or put a sign out, but you got to market the property. You then have to get the contracts written up, and meaning the leasing agreements, and then it tells what people pay and all that kind of stuff. You got to have a way to collect it. Then once you collect it, you got to make sure it stays rented, and if not, you got to kick them out. And then once you do that, let's say all is going well, you collect the money, and then you have maintenance on the property. So you turn around, they say, hey, the water pipe busted or whatever it may be. So you do that. And then if somebody moves out, you got to rent it out to somebody else. And then at the end of the year, you calculate your income minus your expenses, minus your depreciation, everything that goes along, and you provide yourself a profit and loss. And that's what you do for your taxes. So one of the things that I notice about people that buy rental property is they only say to me, well, it's making about $800 a month profit. I said, really? Okay. Well, did you account for your time and any of the things that go along with it? In many cases, they don't. And so if you are cut out for real estate, go for it. You know what? My dad was maybe 40 houses at one time and some commercial property, and he enjoyed doing it. He had a full-time person helping him, but it was a business. I mean, it wasn't some, small-time deal. I have a friend of mine that's, I think he's up over 250 rental properties right now, but he's got full-time staff. And so what he's done is he's built a almost a mutual fund of real estate of his own. He's very diversified, things like that. If you don't want to do it that way, here's what you do. You go buy what's called a real estate investment trust. It's basically a mutual fund that puts your money in real estate. And guess what they do? They manage all of that, do it all. And if you need to get rid of it, if you buy one of these real estate mutual funds, you can get rid of it. It's diversified. You don't have one property, have all that kind of stuff. And you get some pretty good risk-adjusted return. So it's a way you can get into the real estate business without being in the real estate business. So that's a real estate investment trust. So think through this. We got the stock market, which would include stocks and bonds. We've got real estate, which would be rental properties or REITs. All right, and now we're going to go in the third area, which is typically the third place that people can go, and that's called an annuity. And an annuity is designed; it's put together by insurance companies. Now, there's some benefits of annuities. One of the benefits is that you can put money in there, and it grows tax deferred until you pull it out. So that's positive. Negative is that you pay for some of the fees that go along with annuities. So let me give you an example about annuities. So when you go in and you buy a mutual fund or you buy any of these different things that we talked about, you're paying a money manager, and then that money manager invests your money, and so you have a management fee. If you go into an annuity, the annuity has two fees. One is the insurance company, and the other is the money manager. So when we go in and we start looking at that, you say, well, you know, I've had people that there's a lot of sometimes misinformation on why annuities are more expensive. Well, the reason they're more expensive is that you're buying insurance. Now, and when we compare annuities, I always compare annuities to so you understand how insurance works. The number one insurance that we buy, okay, that everybody understands is we go to the bank and we put money in a savings account and we have what's called FDIC insurance. So what is that? So basically what that says is that the bank will insure, the FDIC will insure, if the bank goes under, that you don't lose money and you've got your principal and interest in there that will be guaranteed. Now, what is the benefit of that? Well, the benefit is you take market risk out of the picture, meaning you're not going to put it in like in a mutual fund or something, and you put in $100,000, the market drops 15% and you're down. But the negative is you also take out the upside. And the upside is that right now, money market accounts, bank accounts are paying less than 1%. And so it's not a very good place to grow your money, but it protects your money. So now, if we know over a long period of time that the stock market index is, average 10%. This goes back to S&P since the very beginning. We know that there's ways to make more than 1%. And so we start doing that. We say, well, I want some guarantees. Well, how can I get guarantees and get better than maybe what the bank is doing? And that's where people go into these annuities. All right. So they buy annuities for a couple things. One, they buy annuities to tax defer their money and possibly get a better return than what they would get at the bank. The second reason they do it is to one day turn on an income stream. All right. So now how does the tax deferral work? Well, the reason is the insurance company is getting paid and the investment company is getting paid. Therefore, fees are higher. So what do you get for your money? Well, here's some of the things you get for your money. So a lot of your annuities, for instance, what's called a fixed annuity or a fixed indexed annuity, have guarantees of principal. Well, who guarantees it? Well, the insurance company does. So what are you paying for? You're paying it for insurance. So, well, let me give you an example. If we go into a fixed indexed annuity will have guaranteed principal. If the stock market, if it's tied to one of the indexes in the stock market, and the market's down that year, you get zero. How about that? So, well, zero is not that great, but it's better than losing money, and it's not much different than what I'm getting at the bank anyway. So therefore, zero is my downside. My upside is the market's up, and you get a percentage of the upside. Okay, that's called a fixed indexed annuity. And so your index will be tied to, your account will be tied to some type of index. So people tend to get fixed indexed annuities as a way to maybe improve upon where they're at the bank. All right. Is it a big time growth investment? No. But comparatively speaking to the bank, that's where a lot of people do. Many cases I run into people that have fixed indexed annuities, and the reason they have them is the bank sold it to them. They should have never been in a fixed indexed annuity to begin with because they need something that's got more growth to it. But because the banks tend to do that, that's where a lot of your indexed annuities are bought. There's other annuities. They're called buffered annuities. I call them that. There's a lot of different ways for it. But anyway, what they do is they say, look, if you put your money in for 6 years, sometimes 3 to 6 years, we're going to guarantee you that if the market's down up to as much as 25%, all right, we will guarantee your losses up to 25% if we have a bad market. And we will take and throw, you will have a percentage of the upside. So what happens is it's like putting some guardrails on. You know, you can't go too low and you can't go too high. Okay, but it's a step above the indexed annuity, which has principal guarantee. This wouldn't have principal guarantees, but it has some guarantees on the back end. The last one is called a variable annuity. A variable annuity is all the upside, all the downside, all right, meaning it's across different types of fund families, generally speaking. If you go into a variable annuity, they're going to have, you know, 8 or 10 different fund families. You can move among the funds. You can do all that stuff. And what it will allow you to do is to have your money invested. Now, the good news is it's tax-deferred growth. And you can diversify it, you can change it around and do whatever you want to do with it. And in the case with a variable annuity, they also have some death benefits to it. All these do. In case you die and the market's down, you can have a death benefit that says, hey, give me the top dollar amount at each contract year. If I die, you can also get what's called lifetime income guarantees on withdrawals. So to kind of give you an example, if you want to go into an annuity, you might say, look, we'll pay you 5% for the rest of both of you and your spouse's life, even if the account goes to zero. So if the account goes up, you can get a bigger income. But if it goes down and it goes to zero, we guarantee a lifetime income. So there's all these types of annuities. So what are the negatives mostly associated with annuities? You got to just be careful and when you're purchasing them and make sure you understand what you're getting. Because I've seen annuities that have long-term surrender charges on them to where you put it in there, you might as well say once you put it in there, you can never get it out because they have long-term surrender charges without paying. So you want to look at that. You want to decide if you need the bells and whistles. And what I mean by that is that if you put your money in there, do you really need a lifetime income guarantee when you have a lot of money saved? You may not want to pay for that. Do you need the death benefit? All these different things that go in there. And so basically you can buy an annuity that has no additional benefits other than the tax deferral and whatever you choose, or you can go in and do things that would allow you to have some guarantees on the back end, income guarantees. So anyway, I hope the show has helped today. I have people ask me all the time. They say, what are the most important things that you need to know about investing? All right. Well, here's what I would tell you. The first thing is this. Find out what your goal is. That's your FIN number. You need to get that, and we can help you. If you visit RoyMatlockJr.com, just set an appointment, and we'll help you get your FIN number. And then The next thing is once you understand a rate of return time is the key, and then you understand rate of return, how to get it. You understand that time has to be on your, the quicker the better. Then, guys, automate your savings. And that's where it comes right out of your checking account, right out of your check. One day you'll wake up and it'll be like magic. You'll say to yourself, man, this is working. I'm moving toward where I need to be. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show today. Once again, visit RoyNatlinJr.com if we can help you in any way. And we'll talk to you next week.